Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Prasky. The 2014 Winter Paralympic Games begin on March 7th in Sochi, but here in the U.S., plenty of people with disabilities are tackling tough sports. We open today with a story about racing. Rally racing is popular in Europe and Canada, but has a much lower profile in this country. This week, a Missouri man will compete in a nationally sponsored rally in the Ozarks, but here's the twist. He's a quadriplegic. Jacob McClelland of KRCU in Cape Girardeau has our story.
Chris Rabick leans over a huge sheet of metal, making precision cuts with a plasma cutter. He pauses and motions to some large, 5-foot-tall metal sunflowers in the corner of his shop.
That's what started the whole business. It was one of the big sunflowers. I made one for my sister's wedding, just to one-up everybody else.
He started this business, Apple Creek Metalworks, in a garage in rural Sedgwickville, Missouri. Rabick has been in a wheelchair since he was 18 years old when an automobile accident on a country road broke his neck. Now he only has full use of his right hand. But Chris's story isn't about metalworking. His story is about racing, rally car racing. He does all this, building a garage, starting a business, creating metal artwork, to indulge his passion in rally car.
It combined everything I liked. It was outdoors, off-road, you're sliding around corners. It's like high school county road cruising, but legal, you know, and a lot faster.
Rally car races are often on gravel country roads, and drivers don't know the route until the day of the race. There's one this weekend in Salem, Missouri. Chris will be there, competing in his 1997 Subaru. He bought the car for $700. He rebuilt most of it himself and rigged it up with hand controls. He's poured $11,000 into his ride.
And the irony is that I broke my neck in a vehicle that was sliding around on a gravel road. And now that's what I want to do for fun.
You feel like you're kind of confronting something with that?
I've thought of that. And I think a part of me wants to get over the fear. Because I get nervous still, you know. The accident runs over in my head on a daily basis. And when I'm out there sliding around on gravel roads, you know, you think about it.
Rabick was teaching his girlfriend at the time how to drive a stick shift on a country road. She got a little loose on a corner, couldn't control the slide, and rolled the truck.
I got injured on July 13th, 2004. So I picked 713 as my number. Nobody knows that, really, except you now. I mean, everybody just looks at it as a car number, you know. And that's one reason why I wanted to start racing, is because There's no handicap place, there's no handicap tag. I'm just a normal competitor trying to beat somebody else.
After the injury, Chris spent 2.5 months in a hospital. Speakers came and went trying to motivate and encourage Rabick and the other patients, but he thought they were depressing.
You know, I was an 18-year-old kid right out of high school, pretty much. I didn't want to hear about routines and driving minivans and all this stuff. You know, nobody came in with anything exciting that I felt that I would like.
He decided to become the guy he wished came to speak at the hospital. Now, he takes his race car to hospitals to talk to recently paralyzed patients.
Don't listen to these people that say, you know, you're going to end up working on computers. Because that was the biggest career option they always gave me, was, you know, to do computer work. And I mean, I did construction. That's what I love to do. Nobody told me I could be a welder or a fabricator or drive race cars.
Since his injury, Chris has taken up other hobbies too, like skydiving, kayaking, and scuba diving. Chris Rabick will compete in the rally in the 100-acre wood near Salem, Missouri on February 21st and the 22nd. Look for number 713. I'm Jacob McClelland.
Well, you don't need a car to experience the thrill of physical challenge. In fact, one group, Paradox Sports of Boulder, Colorado, helps those with physical and other disabilities climb mountains. Yes, you heard me right, climb mountains. Joining us now is Timmy O'Neill. He's the founder of the nonprofit Paradox Sports. He climbs and walks on tight ropes and all kinds of stuff. And Tim, welcome to Kansas City. So nice to have you here.
Thanks, Steve. It's wonderful to be on the program.
And with Timmy is Pete Davis. He's also a climber who was born without an arm below the elbow. He says he'd rather have one hand and a good attitude than two hands and a bad outlook. And Pete, that makes a lot of sense to me, too.
That's
nice,
right.
David.
Thank you very much.
And you guys are going to be doing some stuff at University of Central Missouri later on today, right, and this weekend as well.
That's right.
Over in Warrensburg. Yeah, sounds great. Well, first off, I watched a lot of video of you guys last night, and you are amazing people. Timmy O'Neill, you founded Paradox Sports. Did you do that because of your brother's accident that left him paralyzed from the waist down?
Yeah, the way it worked is my brother Sean was injured about 20 years ago, injured his T12 spine, right about his belly button. And I was a climber at this point. So the way for me to deal with his injury was to invite him into my world of climbing. And so through crisis comes opportunity. And he wasn't a climber before his accident, and now he absolutely is. So
he wasn't a climber before, but he became one after. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense now, does it?
That's the beauty of it,
yeah.
is we're constantly flipping it and changing the perspective and allowing for change, which is constant. So with Sean, he became a climber. And as a result, he is now the leading paraplegic, what he calls sit climber out there.
I guess the question then becomes very quickly, how does someone who's a paraplegic, how does that person climb the side of El Capitan?
Right. And now he's been up on El Cap several times. And in fact, this fall, he's going to be going up and leading us. So he's going to be the first one to bring the rope up. So a true pioneer in that sense. And so he's using his arms. I mean, his legs don't work. So, and this is a big thing. 50% of his body doesn't work, but he's 100% himself. So he owns it with that decisive sense of ownership and then makes it happen. And so he is using these 3-to-1 systems, basically mechanical advantage and a lot of courage.
A lot of courage and a lot of strength, too. I think the number was 3,000 pull-ups, the equivalent of that, to pull himself up the side of El Capitan. That's a lot of pull-ups.
It's tremendous.
I was hoping to meet him today. His flight was delayed, so we won't have him in here. But I really wanted to meet him because, I mean, holy smokes.
He's got these giant biceps,
yes.
and super ripped upper body, and,
yeah.
and quite a lighter, underdeveloped lower body. So it kind of works to his advantage. I mean, there's a sort of a silver lining with having really thin, lightweight legs, less to haul up.
That's amazing. Well, Pete Davis, a lot of folks might, you know, just conclude that, okay, you know, you're missing a hand, so just maybe climbing mountains isn't in the cards for you. Why was it in the cards for you?
Well, you know, the first time I climbed, it was such a powerful experience. And really, it was part of being in nature. You know, it was an interaction in the mountains. And so it was just part of a greater whole and a whole lifestyle that I was introduced to at a young age, at the age of 12. And yes, it was kind of an improbable sport for me to get into. But, you know, I found out that I could do it. And it just clicked with me. You know, it was the right
thing. What do you like about it so much? I mean, why has it become so important for you?
Well, you know, it's really, you know, it helps, you know, self-esteem. I mean, when I was a younger kid, you know, helped build a lot of confidence and strength. And again, you know, just an interaction with the natural world. And so just all of that was so all-encompassing, and it just became a lifestyle for me, really.
And there's a sense, I think you've said, that the rock is so big, so immovable, that it's bigger than you, and it helps you connect with the rest of your life in some important ways.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely right, you know. And I mean, climbing is such a great metaphor for life in general, you know. I mean, challenge is, and adversity is really an opportunity to overcome, you know, and to rise above that. And so really, you know, challenge is a gift, and climbing really teaches us to deal with that face to face, you know, every moment, and to break down overwhelming obstacles into manageable bits and pieces. And you do what's just right in front of you, and you do the next most necessary thing, and then you break it down like that. And then before you know it, you've overcome a huge obstacle.
Is there anything you can't do that you need to do that you have to get some help with, or can you do it all?
You know, I'm pretty much able to do it all, luckily, you know, and
yeah.
I feel very fortunate to have the ability that I do. And the fact that I was born without my arm rather than having to lose it later in life is a huge advantage there. You know?
Meaning that you learned how to compensate early on.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm completely adapted and, you know, totally at one in my body. And so, yes, I've figured out, you know, ways to overcome certain challenges and things like that. But really, I'm fortunate enough to be pretty self-sufficient in the vertical world.
You know, tell me a story here, Pete. I mean, was there a moment early in your life when you began climbing, when you were maybe up on the side of something and you looked out and thought, this is for me? This is sort of what I'm here to do, or I'm connecting with this in such an important way.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, really, I think my involvement with Paradox Sports and with the disabled community in general was really that kind of catalyst for me. Because, you know, I grew up, again, very adapted and not feeling like I was a disabled person at all. In fact, I wanted to avoid the word and avoid the whole association. But later in life, I found that, you know, it's such a powerful thing that I can offer to people. And then hanging out and learning from other disabled people is such an empowering thing. And so really that's really crystallized my kind of life focus now, is spreading this to everyone and through Paradox Sports.
So you guys are really living with folks. I'm just trying to guess here sort of what your world is like. You're meeting with people all the time, folks who have a disability of one kind or another, who think probably, Timmy, they can't do X, Y, or Z. And you're there looking them in the eye and saying, oh boy, oh girl, yes you can.
Yeah, and so we, for example, we'll have a program. We had one in New York City. I believe we're going to have somebody on the program later who was with us. And we it's open to everybody, whether they're veterans or whether they're civilians, and they may have a disability, or their partner, their friend, they bring somebody else in. Really what it's about is the demystification of adaptive. Somebody says, oh, I can't, how do I talk to that person? How do I engage that individual? And so it works on both ends of that giving equation, meaning that if you say, I can't, and someone says, I can, courage is involved, right? Mm-hmm. So climbing, kayaking, these types of mountain sports are very adventurous, really about risk management, really about disaster preparation, right? Mm-hmm. So if you voluntarily go and say, I'm going to put myself in a risky situation, then you're ready for when it's involuntary. Mm-hmm. So these people that go, wow, I've never thought I could climb. I never thought I would paddle. I never thought I could go on this camping trip. And we did it all. Now let's go face what's going to be happening in everyday life and overcome it.
And Pete, it's important to face your fears. I mean, most people say, who needs fear? No, thank you. I'll walk away from that for a while. Why is it so important to confront it so directly as you guys do on such a regular basis?
Well, it's an interesting thing with climbers. You know, we kind of have a selective memory process. You know, we kind of forget the bad parts. And, you know, during the process, it's what we call type 2 fun oftentimes. And it's not exactly fun when you're doing it, but it's oftentimes fun when afterwards,
yes,
talking about it.
Yes,
know?
I've had that experience before, too. Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's you know, that selective memory kind of helps with that. But there's something very visceral about you know, getting yourself to a limit and you know, surpassing what you thought you could do. And that's a real rush, and it's something that, you know, we come to kind of thrive on.
So, Timmy, are the folks who are coming, you know, to your business, Paradox Sports, are they coming and saying, I've never done this before, I'm fearful, help me? Or are you getting folks who are coming to you and are folks who've had some experience in the wilderness, have sort of overcome some things and just want to go to the next level?
Well, interestingly, we started with individuals that were at a high level, people that were actually injured climbing. You know, they would take a 100-foot fall, hit the ground, and lose their leg. Or they would have some calamity occur and have a traumatic brain injury. So we were helping individuals get back to their level where they were. And then as a result of that, we started to form Paradox Sports so that everybody could come in, meaning that we were more of a wilderness or risk, you know, heavier risk organization. And then we sort of dialed it back in. Meaning, so what we're doing now is we're coming to the University of Central Missouri to offer an adaptive climbing curriculum. It's a manual and a clinic based on getting people that may not be familiar with this to have their first experience.
You're talking about full body people who are fully capable, as opposed to someone who's dealing with a handicap.
No, we're talking disabled individuals.
Just disabled,
so,
yeah.
So paralysis, neuromuscular, mm-hmm, blindness, amputation, and we're working with those individuals at Central Missouri University to create an adaptive climbing club. So it's an inclusivity, but we're finding there's a barrier for people that are like, wow, I want to go to the climbing gym, or I want to have that experience, but I don't know how. I don't know if I'll be accepted. I don't know what special gear I need. And because we've been doing this since 2007 as an organization, we have a lot of information. At Paradox Sports, we are the body of information, like Pete being below elbow amputee, my brother being paralyzed, and them representing a very high level, so we can come in at the lower level and say, come and check this out. So we're having both people that have never done it, that go on then to achieve great success, and then people that are at a higher level as far as athleticism,
yeah,
and want to check climbing out.
Yeah, I'm guessing some of the folks you work with are just absolutely hungry for what you have to offer them. Am I right?
I mean, Pete, right, everybody that does our stuff, they go, you guys, I've never felt as alive as I am right now. Mm. We have individuals who are suffering greatly, say, war veterans with PTSD or traumatic brain injuries, and we have them say, you guys saved my life. I was thinking about ending my life, and now what I want to do is risk my life in this area where there's well-being associated with it. Like Pete was saying, that it is a, there's a fear that comes with climbing and with whitewater paddling and these sports, but it's a fear that makes you feel more grounded and closer to life, not further from it. Hmm. And that's kind of the paradox of what we're doing. And so we have people that love our programming, and then they talk about it and bring their friends in, and that's why we're here in Kansas City on your program.
Yeah.
And then heading to the University of Central Missouri.
Pete, how much hand-holding do you end up doing with some of these folks who are maybe new to these adventures you're talking about here? Are you really having to take them from a very base level, or how does it shake out?
Yes, oftentimes we're taking people from, you know, scratch beginners, but, you know, we're not coddling, you know, at all. I mean, this is about challenge. This is about rising to the occasion, you know, and so we want to give people the tools to succeed, but we want to see them, you know, rise to the challenge. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, we definitely deal with scratch beginners, and it's definitely a life-changing thing. You know, climbing can be such a powerful vehicle.
Now, you guys do this thing, and I just got to ask about this from watching the vid of you guys last night, where you climb, say, the side of El Capitan out in California, and you do this thing where you unfurl this sort of giant hammock, it almost looks like, where you spend the night on the side of the rock. And I just almost can't wrap my arms around something like that. That just strikes me as, you know, if you just roll over the wrong way, there you go. I'm sure you've had a million jokes like that. How do you do that? I mean, how does that work? You how do you set it up? How do you go to sleep when you're up that high?
Well, it's really not a problem, and that's the most common thing that people say.
It's a problem.
It's a big problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Let's just start with that. Okay?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, but it's a common thing. Most people see that and say, "How do you sleep up there?" You know. But honestly, you're so exhausted. And that is your rest time. You know, you've been working so hard all day long from sun up to sundown, and you just cannot wait to get that portal edge open so you can sit down and relax and take your shoes off, take your harness off, and trust me, you sleep like a baby.
But the wind's like blowing up there that high, isn't it? And aren't you like banging up against the side of the rock sometimes?
It's a delicate, important thing. And also you have one carabiner, one link that's connecting you to that ledge. And if you drop that ledge, now not only are you very upset, but you're going to be sleeping or barely in your harness and sitting in, and then you don't have it for the rest of the way up. So it's always so important to make sure it's tethered in. So it's about taking one's time.
Tethered in, what do you mean?
You mean you have to clip the ledge in, because if you drop it, then it's gone.
The ledge being what?
The portal ledge.
Oh, so, the thing you lie
on. Yeah, exactly. So it's not a hammock. It's an aluminum tube with nylon that's suspended in between it. So it creates a ledge. So you take your time, you set it up, you suspend it, you sit in it. And like Pete was saying, when you finally sit in that thing and open up a can of beans, it's first of all the best can of beans you've ever had in your life. And then when you sleep, you do drop out. And then you have, if it's a beautiful night, you have stars above you. And then what's so interesting is the next morning when you wake up, you look over the edge of that portal edge, and you're thousands of feet suspended above the ground. It's the land above the trees, and it gives you the most amazing perspective. And you really take your time in the morning, because you know you're about to begin to suffer again, and all this toil and work that you're voluntarily going into, which again is that with life, when you voluntarily challenge yourself, it prepares you for when it's not voluntary, for when it comes and gets you, you're better prepared.
So like, okay, you get it. I don't want to belabor this, but you get the thing set up.
Right. And we got to take you up there.
That ain't happening tomorrow, that's for sure. But you get the thing set up, and then like when you sit in it for the first time, you're sort of making sure, wondering if it's going to hold or not, right, Pete? I mean, it is crossing your mind. Is this thing going to hold my weight or not?
Absolutely. And we're always tied in, backed up to the anchor, you know, ourselves. And we sleep in our harnesses, you know, and so we're not ever untied. And and so, you know, we're obviously checking, double checking and triple checking everything while we're up there, you know, a constant process of risk management. And I'll add that, you know, at night, I kind of always have a special moment at night when it's dark and I'm laying there in the portal edge about to go to sleep, and I'm tied to the wall, and, you know, half the sky is blotted out by this gigantic wall that's above me. And it's my little time to kind of put my fears to rest, and I just feel connected to this thing, and I can just kind of go inside and connect with this wall and just say, hey, everything's going to be okay. I'm going to be traveling up your systems of cracks tomorrow, And I just, you know, become at peace, that, you know, at night while I'm laying there just before I go to bed.
Yeah.
But what does happen sometimes, all of a sudden you'll feel a twang and a ting, and then the ledge tacos and you tumble out, right, of the thing. I mean, it's happened.
What? You fall out of it?
Yeah, like the, we've had a friend of mine with Sean, with my brother Sean. Yeah. We were up on El Capitan, and one of our partners, Ammon McNeely, the El Cap pirate, was working on the side of his ledge, and then we hear this, oh, and he fell onto his tether about 10 feet below. And then he just climbs back up, arg, matey, shiver me timbers, and then jumps back in the ledge, and he's fine.
Why had he fallen? What happened?
He was just out of equilibrium for a second. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was unfortunate and then tumbled out of his ledge.
Small problem when you're up that high, isn't
right.
it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Always okay. tied in, though.
Yeah, always tied in. Okay, I get the picture. I want to bring Nick Colgan into our conversation. He's a decorated war veteran who suffers from PTSD. He's been on two adventures with Paradox, and he's featured in some of the National Geographic film and maybe some others. Nick, nice to have you. Good morning, and thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm happy to be on the show with you.
Well, you don't have a physical disability, but you do suffer from PTSD, Nick. I mean, how is climbing, you know, different for someone who has PTSD versus someone maybe who's missing a limb?
Oftentimes it's hard integrating into a community once you return home. I spent 15 months in Afghanistan, so when I got home with PTSD, I would go oftentimes 3 weeks without leaving my house just because of anxiety and a number of things. Kind of this invisible injury I had, it built up these invisible walls. But luckily, I was fortunate enough to find a group like Paradox Sports who got me out and helped me integrate a new community, a community of climbers. So where I wouldn't leave my house for 3 weeks, I'm now at the climbing gym 3 days a week.
I'm just wondering, what was it that finally got you out of the house and into a place like Paradox Sports? What was it, Nick?
It was just people stepping up and saying, hey, maybe you should do this, maybe you should do that. And I was living in New York City at the time, and I had a friend tell me that Timmy O'Neill was speaking at a Patagonia store there. So I decided to go in there and talked me into hopping in a van the next morning with all these people I didn't know to go climbing in a place I'd never been. And you just get to a point where you're so down, and you need to take a chance. And it's due a lot to Timmy O'Neill just because his inspiring and encouraging words and just the getting around people that have overcome obstacles and barriers. So it's good to surround yourselves with those types of people so you can apply it to your own life.
Oh, he's inspiring. I've watched him give a talk last night on one of the videos, and just very impressive. And I'm a little tardy in getting our listeners engaged here. If you want to join our conversation this morning with a question or a comment, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or send us an email to uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us @kcuruptodate. Nick, tell us about the PTSD. What happened to you, and what's that like? Describe it for us.
Well, I was serving as a medic with the 82nd Airborne in Afghanistan for 15 months. Had a fairly good career. I earned a Bronze Star for rescuing a French soldier who had been shot in the head. Carried him out. We were under fire, pinned down for over 3 hours. Also, on top of the PTSD, I suffered a traumatic brain injury. A few weeks after us rescuing this French soldier that I was decorated for, a rocket-propelled grenade, an RPG, hit off the right side of my Humvee. So I returned home in 2008. I couldn't spell my own name, couldn't walk without a cane, and I could barely speak. I had been this helper, this medic, and I came home and needed help for the first time in my life.
So ultimately, Nick, you climb why? What is it about that experience that's helped you deal with the PTSD?
That's a hard question to wrestle because I really don't know why, but I know that I feel amazing and feel like the me that I used to be anytime I finish a climb or finish a Paradox trip. I used to be this go-getter, took risk, and just lived a full life and didn't let any barriers get in my way. I could save a man's life while under fire at 22 years old. So you forget a lot of that, but once you get out on a Paradox trip, you leave inspired and leave like you could conquer the world, but you also leave with a lot of friends and this new family, this community that you can rely on and talk to in your area.
You know, Nick, I came across a quote that you once gave to somebody, and you said that one reason that you climb is to demonstrate that something inside you is still alive. What a great line, and that just struck me so hard. What an interesting thing to say.
Definitely. I joined the Army at 18 years old, right out of high school, and I became a medic. And over 15 months in Afghanistan, you see a lot of stuff that no one should ever have to see. So you become numb to a lot of things because that's the only way you can wake up every day and do it day in, day out, especially as a medic. And so when you come home, you become numb to a lot of things and forget what it's like to feel, forget what it's like to be scared or feel your blood pumping or that adrenaline. And so a lot of times the only way to tap into it is get out and have this controlled risk or this controlled environment where you can take chances and kind of hone back into those times you actually felt.
So you miss some of the rush of the military, the rush of those dangerous situations.
Definitely, definitely. You end up, there's not much of a rush you can get than getting shot at day in, day out, running out, grabbing people and treating them. Their life's in your hands, and you're only 21 years old. You have less responsibility, jumping out of planes back here stateside with the 82nd Airborne. So you live this high, intense life, and then you get home, and maybe the only intense thing in your life is just making sure you make rent on time. So it's good to get back out in some of those situations where you can feel some of that intensity again, but in a good, constructive way.
Yeah.
And then also getting around, you hear it talked about a lot, having battle buddies, your brothers and sisters in arms to your left and right. And you get out in these communities where you may be the only Afghanistan veteran, or you may not know any. So it's good to get these new battle buddies, that are climbing buddies, actually, who have been through adversity or obstacles that you can relate to in one way or the other.
Nick, hang on the line with us here. Timmy O'Neill, how much business is Paradox Sports getting these days? How are things?
Things are great. I took over as executive director about 20 months ago. I'm one of the founders in 2007. And, man, we're really developing our programming predominantly, which is where we found Nick. And as Nick mentioned, we met him and we said, come and check this out. You're going to love it. And he goes, I've got the courage. Nick, well done, dude. And then as far as our educational platform that we're developing, that's because so many people are going, I want this. I have a brother. I have a friend. Myself, I am. And how can I do this? So we said, let's write a book. Let's write lesson plans around it. And let's drop it to the nation now. And so it's really – and then we do this public speaking. We do e-books. We make films because people want to be inspired.
Yeah.
And people want meaning in their lives. I mean, that's essentially what we are. We're a meaning-based organization.
Timmy, Paradox Sports offers what kinds of activities? I mean, we're talking about climbing mountains. What else do you do?
We do rock, ice, water, and wilderness. So we climb rock.
Rock, ice, water, wilderness.
Yeah,
okay.
We climb ice. We do paddling. So whitewater paddling, flat water paddling, stand-up paddling. And then we do wilderness immersion. We take a group of people and we go walk in the woods for 4 or 5 days and connect with the natural world, which after all is what it's about, this really beautiful place called Mother Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we spend so much of our time indoors, at work, getting it done, preparing for the future, trying to create safety and all that stuff. But what we do at Paradox is try and distill it to its most simplest form. Like you said, when you're climbing, breathe. Think about the next move. You know, really what you're doing right now is about owning your moment and making sure that you have well-being. And then, again, you take that to your regular life.
Have you thought about expanding to able-bodied folks?
We do. I mean, we have everybody's allowed to come in. We're plural. We're open. In particular, we work with, say, the disabled population. But in general, we work with everybody that's listening to this program.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody wants meaning in their life. They want to give. And they want to have fun. Right, so that's what we sell at Paradox.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Before you go, I had a couple of things I got to ask you, too, because you have set speed records scaling the nose route of El Capitan.
Yes.
You did it in 3 hours and 24 minutes. And just to give folks a sense of context here, Timmy, and make the rest of us feel poorly here, okay, that route takes the average party 4 or 5 days. Again, you did it in 3 hours and 24 minutes. What's your secret?
The secret is not thinking about things too much. That's why I say I can never be considered to be premeditated anything, because I don't spend too much time premeditating. I just go for it. And then
it's dangerous, though, isn't it?
But life is inherently dangerous. I mean, like they say, the proverbial bus could leave the station. Goodbye, everybody. And so, you know, what really you need to do for speed climbing is accept it, deal with it, and don't turn fear off, but tune it in. Pay attention to it even more. And that's the crucible of climbing. Everything else is melted away, and what you're left with is a very real and meaningful experience. And then you do have to be really, really gutsy. And not have much of a need for risk management like normally.
You know, and one more thing, I saw you on a video do. You did this thing where you strung like a tightrope thing between the tops of two giant rocks, those little thin rocks that you see motion pictures sort of zoom in on a star standing on top of a thing. And you're like walking across this thing without a pole. Like Blondin used to do or whatever, you know, you're tethered to the line, I assume. And
yeah, that's called highlining. And that's the most.
Is that what that is?
It's called highlining.
That's one name for it
to
me.
Well, it's also known as insanity.
Yeah. Thank you.
Or the end of life for most people.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Or being self-underemployed, having a lot of free time on your hands. And so highlining is the most difficult thing that I do.
Okay.
Absolutely. It requires more psychological work than anything else, because you're basically having to walk on air. I mean, it's about 1 inch wide, and it could be anywhere from 60 feet to 200 feet long, and it could be 1,000 feet above the ground. And because there's no solid ground around you, and it's moving so much.
It's moving. That's what people don't realize. Those things move, right?
Well, the one we use, the highlining, the typically like the cable is static. It's held down with guy lines, and it's very fixed, like the guy that just walked over the Grand Canyon.
Yes,
that
right,
guy, right,
right.
So this is a different. This is very dynamic. There's lots of movement. But it's beautiful because when I do it and I'm done doing it, as Pete mentioned, with climbing, you feel this euphoria. You feel this sense of overcoming such a difficult thing.
The flow.
Yeah, it prepares me for anything. Like if I can walk across this high line, I could certainly do this radio interview. I could speak tonight. I can run this business. I could be a great boyfriend. I could be a great brother, and all of these wonderful things. And it's because I practice decisive ownership. I'm going to put myself on this line and walk across it because I can.
So that's as hard as doing this radio interview, right? You're going to make me feel better here. Sitting across from me is just as hard as doing the high line.
It's all about perspective, right?
For it's
some
all about
people.
Perspective.
Right, yeah.
But how do you get the line up there to begin with? I mean, how do you do that?
This is a great question, and we often hear it. Like, how do you get that rope up there?
How do you get it up there?
How did you guys get up there?
Yeah.
We have to go to one side and put it up, and then you have to rappel back down and then climb up the other side and then set it up, and you have to tension it. Like Pete mentioned, this is all about toil. Like if it were easy, it would be called watching television, right? Like, and everybody would be doing it, as it turns out, which is great to chill and watch a program. I love that. But what I love even more is challenging myself physically and mentally, because my biggest time or biggest resource that I have to manage is my time. My lifetime. In between, you know, my birth and death, I've got this time to really hang out with Pete and Nick and you and be here on this program. And yeah, I'm
loving
it.
You guys are so also interesting. I sure appreciate all of your time. Nick Colgan, thanks for taking some time with us today. Timmy O'Neill, again, the founder of the nonprofit Paradox Sports, and Pete Davis, a climber with him. You guys were just great. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks,
sure,
Steve. Thank you very much,
you
Steve.
Bet. Appreciate it, guys. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the humor, which you got to have in being the parent of an autistic kid. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.
You're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 FM.